Welcome to KCSB's Public Affairs Spotlight. I'm Kat Swift speaking with Crystal Farmer, a social justice activist in the community and a former Santa Barbara City College student and employee of the college who is bringing a sexual harassment and racial discrimination lawsuit against the college. So we're going to be talking today broadly in terms of her case and then also how it illustrates problems, ongoing racial problems at Santa Barbara City College. So welcome, Crystal, to our program.
Hello. Hello. Glad to be here. Thank you for having me on.
My pleasure. Definitely. Because your case really illustrates kind of the intersection of race and gender.
Yes.
Because you're bringing both a sexual harassment case and a racial discrimination case against yes. the college. So can you tell us a little bit about your case, how it got started and what are some, how it illustrates ongoing problems of racial mm-hmm. harassment and sexual discrimination at the college?
Yeah. So it's, of course, fairly new to the public because it was filed in the Superior Court in March, I believe, of this year. But, of course, ongoing issue for me. Going back to 2017, you know, when it all started. And it's the whole journey was really, to sum it up, to best explain it, is a journey of failed processes. Because, you know, what people don't see, because, you know, the lawsuit is, you know, long, the complaint is long, it details many things. And but a lot of times people can't see the visuals behind those details and the processes. And it was a journey, you know, a journey of me going through all the proper avenues to report things, a journey of me saying, you know, hey, if I am more vocal or if I participate more, if I'm on student government or if I learn, you know, Robert's Rules of Brown Acts, if I sit on committees, you know, they gotta listen to me. I'm elevating, I'm educating myself, I'm learning, I'm growing, I'm sitting at these tables, I have the terminology, I have the vocabulary. They've mm-hmm. gotta listen to me, they gotta hear me. And then really realizing, you know, no matter how educated I am, how smart I am, I'm always just gonna be a Black woman to them. And I think that is just a general sense of how my case started, how it formulated. It was just time and time again being failed.
Right. Well, you were an employee of the university in the Department of the Office of Equity, Diversity, and Cultural Competency,
yes.
right?
Yes.
Okay, so you were already an advocate speaking yes. out about racial harassment and racial discrimination at the mm-hmm. at the college. And so you were already at the table in that sense, just
yeah.
representing Blacks at the
yes.
college.
Yes, I was representing Blacks. I was representing single mothers because I as well am a single mother. I was representing women. I was advocating for the LGBTQ+ community, you know, veterans, anyone. I've always had an open heart of compassion. I love to listen and I love to really understand different backgrounds and where people come from. So I'm the type of person, when you come to me and you trust me with your story and you trust me with your grievance, I'm going to do something about it, because mm-hmm. you should not tell people something and they just hold on to it and not take it anywhere. I feel like there's so much pain that can be healed by you simply just caring and putting forth effort. And that's who I was. And
that was your job.
That was my job. That's what I was getting paid for. But besides that, you really have to have the heart to do the work, because, you know, you see it all around in nonprofits, you know, the lack of care or people doing it for the affirmations. You know, I do it because I truly care about people and I truly, you know, where we are in this world really, it really breaks my heart. And if I can spend the rest of my life, you know, making it a better place, putting Band-Aids on, no, healing wounds, not putting Band-Aids on them, mm-hmm. you know, that's what I'm going to commit myself to. So that's where I started in that department. You know, I learned a lot. And
you were an advocate for marginalized students on the
yes,
campus.
Yes, I was. I mean, I just showed up. That's how I started. You know, I believe the best way you start to do work is just throwing yourself in there and learning as you go. And that's kind of what we did, because it was a new department. You know, the director at the time was new to the campus. So we really had room to develop what we wanted it to be and grow. And just over time, I felt like the leadership was lacking. They weren't doing what they needed to do. I felt like they weren't equitable. I felt like, you know, a lot of the very things that we're fighting against, they were, you know, I could have easily accused them of. Mm-hmm. And that for me was not okay, because for me, if I'm gonna look at a director of a department such as this, I'm gonna hold you up to the utmost standard. You should be causing the least amount of harm, because you should be fixing problems on this campus. There's a critical lens on someone like that, you know? And I had one, and I raised concerns that I had in a very loving way, not in a way where, because, you know, at the time, this was someone that I thought I could trust. This was someone that, you know, I had worked with for a year now. This is someone that, you know, you work closely with. You're spending time, you know, with other coworkers, of course. And, you know, I raised concerns thinking this, if any department you can address things and have these conversations, it would be the equity department, right? And I just wasn't met with...
What were some of the concerns that you were raising?
I just felt like the program, you know, equity is to serve marginalized underrepresented students. And of course, you know, SBCC is a HSI, Hispanic Serving Institution. So our programming was geared towards them a lot. And
not so much blacks, you feel
and,
like?
But not, missing a lot of things, LGBTQ+, plus, Native American. And so, of course, as a black woman, first and foremost, I noticed, where's our programming? So, you know, I was going to bring that up first, and I did. But I also mentioned, you know, we're lacking in a lot of areas where we can grow, we can do this, and we can do that. And it just wasn't taken well, you know? It was, and then from there, it was like a push out, and...
And you voiced these concerns to the director of the program.
Yes, I did. I voiced the concerns, and I actually... because of the power dynamics, I didn't want to go into that conversation on my own. And so I actually, I'm big on leaning on your mentors and checking in with people before you react. Because I just want to also always make sure I'm coming from a place where I can be affirmed and validated. So I checked in with someone that I trusted, and they offered to talk with me so that, you know, my message could get across in a way where I wasn't pointing fingers. I was just saying, hey, I'm noticing something. You know, how can we do better? And that still wasn't met well, even with an additional person being involved in that conversation.
So what were some of the reactions?
It really felt like they felt like they were being attacked. Like, really, like I was attacking them.
So they took it personally.
A very, like, you know, I don't know where this is coming from, I don't do that, and it can't just be all on me, kind of that victim, woe is me thing, which for me really...
And deflecting it, it sounds like they just disavowed your claims, and were just saying that, no, this is not true, this is not me.
And for me, that was really alarming, because as someone at that degree level... holding this type of position, you would think they would be able to have conversations. So that was already, you know, alarming to me. And then from there, it just became, you know, leaving me out of meetings and not communicating with me, to my job description and responsibilities and roles being therefore questioned, and then isolation, and team members stop talking to me, and then just, you know, a cycling downhill, just really awful experience for me.
Like
someone that started in the department, was one of the first workers in the department alongside someone else. Just a really hostile work environment for me that caused me a lot of stress. And mind you, I'm still taking care of two kids. I'm still going to four classes. I'm still working. I'm still on student government. So I'm holding all this weight and then still having to deal with this and maneuver through this. And and adjust to it. Because, you know, who am I? Who's going to advocate for me? You know, who's going to represent me?
Right.
To the point where, you know, I just, you know, the finally receiving my paycheck and getting half of my earnings when I definitely knew that was not okay.
So they punished you economically.
Yeah. And with no communication of it. And so that's when the whole process started of me going to the higher ups and going through the processes. And then from there, it was just ongoing of just, okay, wow, this person's not going to do anything. Let me try this person. Oh, wow, this person's not going to do anything. Well, let me try this person. Oh, now this person's not going to do anything. Well, let me sit on the board. Oh, wow, they don't care. Mm-hmm. And it's just like to the point where you're mad. You're angry. Sure. You're like, you tell people they have these processes. You tell people there's these avenues. You tell people there's these support. And then they do it. And you further traumatize them, further isolate them, further create a hostile work environment for them. And then you expect people not to be upset. You expect people not to be angry. You expect people not to go crazy, you know? And then look at you when you are reacting like, what is she doing? Why is she doing that? What could be wrong with this person?
Isn't there a Title IX office there, too?
Title IX office, which I very well filed one. Mm-hmm. And that went nowhere.
So, like, what were some of the offices that you felt like failed you when you were in some of the offices and administrative positions that were supposed to be there to support you that just utterly failed you?
I mean, majority of the administration that deals with students. So nobody like IT, nobody in that realm, business finances. But I mean, people cannot say they're not familiar with my issues and concerns on that campus. Cause I was very vocal. I mean, met with his boss at the time, everything was happening. Then from there, you know, I filed a Title IX. And then from there, I'm also sitting on student government. So I have, you know, advisors on there and someone that's also in administration that also knew my situation. And from there, after losing my job in Omoja, also meeting with another administrator to explain that situation and why I felt I was wrongfully terminated. So all these people that are in cahoots, that are having meetings together, that very well know my situation, and no one supported me. No one did anything. I'm not even sitting here saying that I expected people to be fired or terminated because, you know, I'm a student. Now I see the wrongdoing and everything, absolutely everything. But at the time I'm like, okay, I'm a student. I really just wanted healing. I wanted mediation. I wanted accountability. Justice. I wanted justice. You know, I wasn't asking for people to be terminated. I would never come from a place like that because I was more so not understanding why people wanted to attack me, why people wanted to be so cruel to someone that was literally spent her blood, sweat, and tears trying to make that place a better place. Mm-hmm. So I was a big part of me in my journey was like, I want mediation. I want healing. I want justice. I want accountability. And I couldn't even get that. And I asked for that as well. Right. So it was just failing me to the point where I was like, someone has to answer for this. Someone has to, because if this is happening to me, I know I'm not the only one. Just imagine students coming forward that aren't as vocal as me, that aren't sitting on as many committees as me, that aren't in student government, that aren't working on campus, because I'm someone that they're constantly seeing. They know my face. They know my name. So in a sense, I'm privileged enough to have comfort to access those spaces. Mm-hmm. So I started thinking, wow, imagine a Black woman that doesn't have that vocabulary, that doesn't want to access those spaces, but is very well experiencing the same thing as I am. Right. I have to say something. I have to be an example.
Right.
And that's really what my lawsuit came from.
Right. And your case actually does illustrate the larger issue of racial discrimination at Santa Barbara City College. Yep. I mean, there's your case and also sexual harassment. There's the second woman that has brought in this last year that's brought a sexual harassment case against the university. Yes. And then the whole racial discrimination thing with the professor that said the N-word, and then the MAGA crowd, or the white nationalist crowd coming on the campus, and something about the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yes.
I mean, there's been a lot of racial hostility at Santa Barbara City College now for the past couple of years. And your case seems to kind of illustrate that juncture of gender and race, and how things can really go awry when things are not dealt with properly, and the channels aren't. But that seems to be a failing at City College right now.
And once again, to me, I just keep saying it's really rooted in the policies and the procedures. They're so
discriminatory
without wanting to say it. Yeah, and very bland and not getting to the root. I mean, you can watch the board meetings when they were simply trying to make an anti-racism resolution, and they couldn't say things like anti-racism in the resolution. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't want to use those words because that would be us saying that we are racist. And it's like, so we're going to sit here and say that racism doesn't exist, really, in 2019 when we have the internet and viral videos and you
Donald
know.
Donald Trump.
Exactly. That alone. Uh-huh. So it's sad because these universities, these institutions are operating and they're designed exactly like they were meant to be from the beginning. And it's unfortunate in 2019 that I'm still having to do stuff like that. It's unfortunate that in this time, this age, and how progressive, you know, we say we are, especially as California, that we're still dealing with this stuff. It makes you really say, you know, at this point, we just need to make our own. Our own schools, we need to make our own things, because they're operating exactly like they want to, and anytime there's pushback or change, you know, it's, let's ostracize this person, let's make this person look crazy, let's push this person out. We don't want change, you know? It's like that whole thing, like, who wants change? I do. Who's gonna actually change? Oh, you know?
People check out.
Exactly. It's like, not me.
But so in your case progressed. So there was first the whole issue about just trying to bring up some of the problems that you saw in the program, then being ostracized and kind of pushed out of your department, it sounds like. Mm-hmm. And then from there, it sounds like it escalated.
It did. I actually, you know, after advocating for myself to get a new position, because my whole thing was I still want to do the work I'm doing because I'm needed in this work. I'm needed on this campus. And I shouldn't have to stop doing the work because I have a boss like that. And I pitched my story to his boss at the time, and he went for it. He agreed. He valued my work as a person, me as an individual. And at the end of the day, saw my work ethic. You know, I produced results. So he agreed, and I was able to start working in Emoja.
And what is Emoja? Exactly?
Emoja is a program that's in, I think, majority, maybe most, I'm not sure all, of the community colleges, and in a few universities have adopted it. I know UC Riverside, and I believe other ones are getting on the bandwagon. But
and what does it
it's
do?
So it means unity in Swahili, and it's a program designed to help African-American students achieve academic success. But, of course, it's welcoming to any student that wants to be involved in it. I've seen students of all races in the program that want to be a part of it. But, yes, the marketing, the practices are all rooted in, you know, African culture, and just implementing that into, you know, African-American and knowing your roots, knowing your background, and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Is it kind of like akin to the here at UCSB, where we're going to soon have this Office of Black Student Development? Is it something like that?
I mean, yeah, I guess. It's a support program.
Right.
So it's equivalent to like an EOPS, an equity, but it's its own thing, because I firmly believe in Africans, or blacks, I'll term black, that they deserve their own program, especially in this day and time, with right. everything we've been through. So I do believe it needs its own program. I know in some institutions it is under the equity umbrella, but a lot of them are standing on its own as well.
Right.
The SBCC Emoja is currently under the Equity umbrella, as far as I know, unless it's changed. But that's the whole reason why I, well, what I believe is the reason why I lost my position.
Yeah, okay. So can you explain that a little bit more?
So basically, I advocated for to go work because I was kind of networking with this other dean at the time on campus, and they wanted to bring the Emoja program. And I was like, hey, you know, me and my old boss's boss were trying to figure out where I could fit in. And I was like, hey, that's perfect. I can fit in there. If I bring it up, you know, would you be willing to bring me on as an employee? They agreed. So we started doing the whole Emoja work, and that was great. I really loved it. It was, now I was specifically, you know, my job was to support Black students. So, you know, implement programming, get funding, get a space for the program, fight for, so we can hire some staff for the program, implement a Emoja learning community and courses. Basically have Emoja practices in the courses that you're taking. Mm-hmm. And so doing all that groundwork behind it and working towards that and really just advocating, you know, so the first year was me really pushing for people to support the program and collaborating and lots of meetings and recruitment, mm-hmm. getting students signed up, getting them involved. So that was, you know, it's the first year, so it's that rough patch.
Right.
But it was successful, you know, me and another student's fighting efforts really got what we wanted. We got the push for the full-time coordinator, the push for the part-time staff. We got a space for it. So we were really, once again, producing results.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started hearing that they were going to put it under equity. And of course, I was like, absolutely not. I had been at this time very vocal about the department being anti-Black, anti-Black woman. Mm-hmm. I had been very vocal about the issues that I had with the director mm-hmm. While I was working there. I mean, I had been very vocal about my concerns within this whole year of me still working for Emoja. So I absolutely not. That was not going to happen. Like, not while I was there. And I was vocal about that because, right. of course, no one was telling me directly.
Mm-hmm.
I was, you know, hearing it through the grapevine.
Mm-hmm.
And so I absolutely was vocal about it. And I said, absolutely not, you know, and I went back and through the timeline and stated why and why this was not okay and how this needs to not happen and how I was tired of having to say this again. And it should just be known at this point. It should be clear. We shouldn't even be debating this issue.
Right.
I was assured that, you know, Emoja wouldn't go under equity and that it's going to stay like it is. Don't worry. You have nothing to worry about. I'm not working for 2 weeks, kind of taking a break before fall semester starts. Once again, hearing that it did go under equity, they ended up putting Emoja under equity. So then I reach out and find out that it is now under equity, and I no longer had a job.
Okay.
Yeah. And so it just happened. You know, I was reassured that wasn't going to happen.
And then it did.
And then it happened.
All right. And then you were also.
And then I was also out of a job. And now, you know, the person that I was accusing of, you know, all these things now is in control of the Emoja program is directly under his department. So, you know, I was just like, this is. That's
obvious racial discrimination. I mean, you brought your concerns about this director, and then they moved the very department that's supposed to represent African American students under the control of the man that is accused of this kind of racial discrimination.
And publicly, at this point, there had been articles written mm-hmm. where I had stated this. You know, the channels, the SBCC. Website. So this is not just hearsay meetings. This is, you can go and look on the channels and date back into February when I was February of, I think, 2018 in the channels mm-hmm. newspaper. When I was very vocal about that, very vocal about that department and the issues that Black students had with it. And so for them to just blatantly ignore that and ignore someone like me that was so vocal and an advocate and had done so much, you know, I had a track record at this point on that campus of doing so much for Black students. So it was just, it was inexcusable. This is bigger than me, like I keep telling everyone. It's I'm just the example, and the person that's going to set the example and hopefully leave a marker on that place that really sets a tone to where things have to change there. Because it's not okay. We're seeing it everywhere. We're seeing it everywhere, you know, how Black students are being treated, how Black women are being treated. You know, and just women in general.
But particularly women of color.
And I think it's time that, you know, more of us stopped looking at ourselves as no one's going to believe us. And, you know, we're not going to have any support, because we truly need to start voicing our concerns. And we need to start taking it to the point of legal action, because that seems to be what they respond to. You know, it's like now I'm looking at them like, now you can't ignore me. Now you have to respond. Because I was ignored. And now it's like, ignore me now. Ignore me now. Whether you like it or not, you have to read that complaint. And you have to investigate. And you have to look into things. Because you sat there and then, you know, putting their own foot in their mouth. This is what you get for ignoring me. A simple glance, a simple look into it, a simple careful investigation, and these problems could have been solved. So hopefully going forward, you do your job. And we wouldn't have these problems. Because, like I said, who wants these problems? No one wants these problems. If you would have asked me 2 years ago, Crystal, this is, could be your journey. Do you want to go through it? I'm like, oh, no, definitely not. Why would I want to do that? Like, you know, I love academia. I love, you know, activism. I love sitting on committees. I loved being on student government. I really loved that. And I had to lose it all because, you know, an institution couldn't support me, couldn't believe me.
Well, and it, but it reflects the larger culture at Santa Barbara City College of racial discrimination.
Exactly. And like you saw what was happening at UCSB here, which, you know, I applaud them for seeing a time where the news was really highlighting that and seizing that moment. Like, you know what? No, because, you know, I know their fight here wasn't new. I'm sure that has been an ongoing battle as well. But the fact that SBCC and UCSB at the same time were making headlines, you know, that was big. And
Do you think the success here at UCSB of the Office of Black Student Development can is maybe linked in some ways to what's going on at City College? The fact that, because it seems like two such different cases at City College. It sounds like the Omoja program and Office of Equity kind of fell apart, or certainly wasn't doing its job representing students. And then here at UCSB, they were actually able to get an Office of Black Student Development. I mean, a real victory for Black students here.
Well, they well, Omoja did get, you know, the full-time program advisor. They are thriving now with the staff that they have that's really supporting them. Two amazing Black women over there holding it down. So they are getting the support. Like, basically, my downfall, my blood, sweat, and tears gave a lot of Black students over there the opportunity. So I'm not going to say my work didn't go unseen. It went, it's definitely, it was never acknowledged by the administration or the campus. But, you know, I'm still in connects with the Omoja. I the two Black women that work there, I love them. They're friends, they're dear friends to me. And so, and a lot of the Black students still contact me, still lean on me for support. So, you know, my work, everything happened for a reason. I'll say that, you know, so that's also, I ground myself in that. So alone from UCSB, SBCC has had its successes in moving forward towards that. Their response was super slow and, just downright disrespectful, because it was slow and it was very ignorant and just horribly conducted the way they handled things. But I think because of that, UCSB was like, we don't want them problems. You know, like,
so we better give the Black Student Union what they
yeah,
want.
Yeah, we saw it was kind of like watching, you know, lighting a match and watching a place burn down and then somebody putting fuel over here and say, no, we don't want you to throw a match on us. You know, we're good. Like, you know,
we'll
so,
get you that office.
And not to take away from any UCSB students' efforts, because I'm sure that fight has been long and hard.
Sure.
But I will, just from what it looked like, I, of course, don't know because I wasn't at organizing meetings with UCSB students. But from what it looked like from an outside perspective was that they did not want those SBCC problems. And I don't blame them. Sure. You know, SBCC was in the headlines like every other week.
Yeah.
Literally every week.
For the past
for the
years.
Same, you know, to the point where, you know, president left. And,
right, yeah.
You know, Walt
uh-huh.
says his health's related, but, you know,
yeah.
what a coincidence.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't blame Chancellor Yang. You know, I would do the same thing, you know, for public and media purposes.
Yeah.
You know, I definitely see it, but, you know, also kudos to Black students for seeing that. I don't know if that was their push,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, it was perfect timing, and I'm
yeah.
so glad, because it's long overdue. And moving forward, just really learning and growing from this experience, and the best way I can do that is by teaching people about it and educating people about it and sharing my story.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Crystal Farmer.
Of course.
And I wish you all success with your lawsuit. Much needed, I think, but like you said, it's the way that institutions pay attention to people, especially people of color, is you have to sue.
Unfortunately. Hopefully going forward, people will just respect people and we won't have to do that.
Right, but it does seem like that. But anyhow, thank you so much for being on our
thank you
our
for
program
having
today.
Me.
And for our listeners out there, you've been listening to KCSB's Public Affairs Spotlight, and we're on Friday evenings at around 5 o'clock.